everybody. Welcome to
Twin Souls Podcast with your hosts,
Jordan
and Kelsey.
Stay tuned for an episode of Murder, Mystery,
and Mayhem. Welcome all of our listeners near and far. Today we are going to be discussing the case of Matthew Shepard. Was it a hate crime? Were drugs involved? Was this crime premeditated? Find out all the details here on Twin Souls Podcast, Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem Edition. Matthew Shepard was born in Casper, Wyoming on December 1, 1976. In 1998, Shepard was lured from a bar by two men with the promise of a ride home. Instead of giving Matthew a ride home, the two men took him to a remote area in eastern Laramie, beat him, and let him die.
On the evening of October 6, 1998, Matthew, an openly gay University of Wyoming freshman, had just met up with friends to plan the LGBT Awareness Week on the town's campus. Afterwards, he tried to persuade some of his friends to join. However, none of them wanted to go. The 21-year-old somehow ended up at the Fireside Lounge. This was just a lounge nearby that he went to. While there, he actually ran into two roofing workers known as Russell Henderson and Aaron McKinney. Both were the same age as him. The pair actually saw Matthew as an easy target, being 5'2" and slender and lengthy in build. The county sheriff, Dave O'Malley, who is the lead investigator in the case, says McKinney's own statement that he and Russell went into the bathroom at the Fireside Bar and they planned to act like they were gay to try and gain Matthew's confidence. So the sexual orientation issue started almost immediately. They picked him because he was gay.
Small in stature.
Exactly. Being 21 and 5'2", he's really small for his age.
Yeah, he is. He's pretty tiny.
He really is. So, I mean, I understand where they would possibly seem that he would be an easy target, unable to fight back against two guys who I'm going to is 5'6", 5'7", and probably at least 30 more pounds bigger than him each.
Yeah, they were a lot bigger than him.
The killers would actually tell the police they planned to lure Shepard into McKinney's pickup truck so they could rob him. Once in the vehicle, McKinney actually pulled the gun and began to beat Shepard, grabbing his wallet and taking out a $20 bill. They drove about a mile out of town down a dirt road, and they ended up in a rocky prairie of sagebrush and range grass. Henderson used a clothesline to tie Shepard to a log fence. McKinney began to furiously pistol whip their captive. Matthew was struck in the head and face between 19 to 21 times, with the butt of a very large Smith & Wesson revolver. The only time I've ever seen those dramatic injuries were in high traffic speed crashes. You know, the kind of crashes that cause extremely violent compression fractures to the skull. McKinney and Henderson stole their victim's patent leather shoes, left him to die. After leaving Matthew tied to a fence, McKinney and Henderson headed for Matthew's home. But on the way, they encountered two young Hispanic men. Emiliano and Jeremy were actually slashing tires for fun when they got into a fight with McKinney and Henderson and actually cracked open Morales' head with the same gun he just beat Matthew with.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So
he pistol whipped him?
Yeah, he pistol whipped him. So basically, they had their fun torturing Matthew was hit.
Yeah.
He was hit between 19 and 21 times. Like, that's a little excessive. Like,
overkill.
It is. Why did they need to hit him that many times in the first place? They were robbing him. They just had to tie him up, really.
And he probably was screaming, like, take whatever you want. Just leave me alone. Like, don't hurt me, you know?
Exactly. So then they almost immediately after they go out and get into another fight, or I wouldn't say another fight, get into a fight and crack open another person's skull. When police officer Flint Waters arrived, he grabbed the gun that he actually found in the truck because they had actually ran in different directions, both McKinney and Henderson. Also inside of the truck, Matthew's shoes and credit card. So basically nothing was set in stone. They didn't compare and say, oh, these two are connected, because it happened with probably within 2 hours of each other, I would say. I wouldn't say it was much difference, because it says they were heading to Matthew's home.
They were on an adrenaline high, obviously.
Oh, yeah, they were. And then they seen these two guys slashing tires and were like, oh, let's do this.
Yeah, perfect round target. Two. Yep.
So Matthew was left tied up, beaten, and battered. So the following evening, a teenager fell off his mountain bike nearby while riding his bike just along the road. And he seemed to be what looked like a scarecrow or like a Halloween costume. So he approached it and realized it was actually a person. Policewoman Reggie Flute responded to the scene. She was the first one there, and she states Matthew was on his back with his arms behind him. He was actually breathing, but not much. His respirations were few and far between.
And I read that he was covered in blood too.
Seen him, he looked so small. Yep. Yes, he was covered in, like, those pistol
bashed his skull open
completely in blood.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
They tortured him. They tortured him.
They totally did.
So she's there. And she comes across Matthew, and he looks to be like a young child, younger than how old he was, just because of his stature was so small. Flute, who is now actually retired, attempted to open Matthew's mouth, clear his airway, but it was clamped shut. So they clamped his mouth shut. She remembers trying to revive him, saying, "Baby boy, I'm here, kiddo. You're going to be okay. Hang in there. Don't give up. Come on, you can do this." The political science student dreamed of becoming a diplomat. Today, the buck fence where Shepard was bound and bludgeoned is gone. Former crime scene is now a windswept field studded with cacti and crisscrossed by antelope spore. There's nothing to indicate that this is the site of the deadliest assault that changed America. They shut it down, basically. They said, oh, okay, little gay boy died. So we don't need to memorialize him here.
That's not right.
No. So they finally actually connected that Aaron McKinney and, or sorry, they actually finally connected that Matthew Shepard is the one who was beaten to death and left for dead. They contacted his parents. His parents rushed to Colorado Hospital from Saudi Arabia, because Dennis Shepard, his father, worked as an oil rig inspector. They arrived, and it was said to be the dental brace. That's how Dennis and Judy knew it was their son in the hospital bed. Bandages and stitches all over his face. The bandages around his head where the final blow had crushed his brainstem. His fingers and toes were curled into a comatose position already. Tubes were enabling his body to stay alive. One of his eyes was actually partially open so they could see the blue eyes. His face was swollen, actually kind of unrecognizable till you got 5 days after the attack. On October 12th, Matthew died. On October 14th, a celebrity vigil was held on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, attended by the likes of Ted Kennedy and Ellen DeGeneres. Wow. Barbara Streisand telephoned the Albany County Sheriff's Office demanding quick action on the case. Madonna called an assistant to the university president, Philip DeBoule, who complained about what had happened. The day Matthew died, President Clinton told journalists at the White House, "In our shock and grief, one thing must remain clear. Hate and prejudice is not the American values." The funeral was attended by more than 1,000 mourners and picketers by the Westboro Baptist Church, led by Fred Phelps, a defrocked minister and founder of GodHatesFags.com. To counter the protest, that Matthew's friends and family actually dressed as angels.
So Matthew, he was actually known after this crime as a symbol of basically anti-gay hate crimes. So he really was the face of this horrible, horrible crime. And people started waking up and realizing that this was a really big problem, these anti-gay hate crimes that were happening. And this one was extremely gruesome. And it kind of made people wake up and say, this isn't right. We need to do better.
Of course. There was a huge uproar. So many people stood by, fight injustice that has been done. I actually have here a statement, or maybe not a statement, a piece of, let me find it. The men responsible for his death were convicted of first degree murder and given 2 life sentences. They were not, and that is, repeat, not charged with a hate crime. as it actually wasn't possible under Wyoming's criminal law. But after a lengthy wrangling process by President Obama, they finally signed the Matthew Shepard Act into law in 2009, a law which defines certain attacks motivated by victim identity as hate crimes. So even though they could not go back and recharge him as a hate crime now, this was a hate crime. Matthew has his own law now because it's unjust of what happened. They should have been charged as a hate crime, and they weren't.
They should have been. And President Bill Clinton also condemned the attackers as full of hatred or full of fear or both. So even he thought it was a hate crime. And there were candlelit vigils all across the nation after this happened. And Matthew died as a cultural age of innocence, blissful ignorance. He was, you know, it was coming to a close for American millennials. You know, he really brought out the real hate that people were starting to have for gay people and what they were doing. They were killing them just because of who they were or who they loved.
There is a little bit of some theories out there on what actually happened, why he was targeted. I am actually going to get into it kind of briefly because it is a lot of information.
And we do want to say that even people are still talking about this crime today, even though it happened before Columbine happened all those years ago. So people are still talking about him today, and he's still a huge symbol of this crime and that change needed to happen after this to protect people like Matthew.
The Matthew Shepard story isn't actually finished yet. So there is an investigative journalist named Stephen Jimenez who spent 13 years interviewing more than 100 people in connection with the Matthew case. He actually wrote a book called The Book of Matt, Hidden Truths About the Murder of Matthew Shepard. His conclusion was that the grotesque murder wasn't actually a hate crime, but it could be blamed on, I don't know how true this is. We're going to, next few statements, we are going to investigate more. And if we find any truth in it, we might be willing to actually post this next part. But this is a questionable part here, that speculation that we might not want to include because we don't want it to hurt any of Matthew's friends or family. So basically, the crime could be blamed on crystal meth, a drug that was actually flooding Denver in the area around the time of his death. That book actually caused a lot of anger. They also went on to say that Matthew was addicted to and actually dealing crystal meth. He actually dabbled in heroin. He took significant sexual risks and was being pimped out alongside Aaron McKinney, one of the killers, whom apparently he actually had occasional sexual encounters with. And it's also stated that Matthew was HIV positive at the time of death.
Which, again, this is all just speculation and stuff that's come to fruition, I guess, if you want to say that. So we're not going to back up these claims until we research these more, but we just want to put it out there so other people know what each detail is about this case and what other people are saying.
Okay, it actually goes on to say that there was a rumor that the killers knew that Matthew actually had access to a shipment of crystal meth worth $10,000, which they actually wanted to steal. There's also one more piece of information that's out there. It says somewhere along the line, however, Matthew fell from being a grade A student to a possible drug addicted prostitute who diced with danger. He suffered periods of depression, possibly as a result of being gang raped a few years earlier while on holiday in Morocco. Even if it was true, that still doesn't give them a reason to kill him.
No, it doesn't. There's never a reason to do something so gruesome and horrible to someone because of who they are.
Okay, so there's actually a little more information on this because we did say that he was possibly in a sexual relationship or a few times with one of the killers. It is believed to this day, a retired police officer, Waters, it doesn't say Waters' first name, but Waters states, I believe to this day that McKinney and Henderson were trying to find Matthew's house so they could steal his drugs. It was fairly well known in the Laramie community that McKinney wouldn't be the one that's striking out in the sense of homophobia. some of the officers I worked with had actually caught him in sexual acts with another man. So they were stating it didn't make any sense.
I also want to say, too, about this the hate crime. One of our major thing was this a hate crime? Well, we're going to let you decide that. I would say yes, because the original service in Matthew's hometown of Casper was picketed by an anti-gay preacher from Kansas, Reverend Fred Phelps of Westboro Baptist Church, and his flock, who included his children, held place cards with homophobic slurs and shouted to mourners that the dead student was burning in hell. Law enforcement had to show up and protect the family by making them wear bulletproof vests to step outside. The couple have actually kept Matthew's urn of ashes at home because they were very concerned that someone might desecrate his grave.
So actually, just speaking about this, Barbara Poma, who is the owner of the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, once told Judy Shepherd that she was surprised there was no memorial for Matthew in Wyoming. "Barb, you don't understand," Judy Shepherd recalled, responding. "Orlando embraced you. Wyoming did not embrace us." 2 decades later, Matthew Shepherd's legacy still divides the residents of Laramie. Just days before the anniversary of his death, a forum held in town questioning the long-established belief that Matthew Shepherd was murdered because he was gay. Even to this day, there's some people still don't accept that, oh, it was a hate crime, it was a hate crime. They're still fighting it, fighting this information that is out there. It's true, it's a hate crime, yep. Regardless.
I agree. And he talks about McKinney, Aaron McKinney talks about how he wrote to another inmate that he was very drunk and he was homophobic. And he also said that he flipped out and began to pistol whip the fag with my gun ready at hand. So this just further shows that he was out to get him because of his sexual orientation, because Shepherd had apparently touched his leg during the car ride and he flew into a gay panic, which is basically when someone kills a gay person because of their sexuality. That's all there is to it. You know, once a gay person touches someone's leg that's straight, they flip out and they blow up. They cause murder. There's still been cases like that today happening called gay panic.
It is out there and people are still calling it to this day. Unfortunately, actually, it is working. People are getting off on this gay panic. And there's a lot of Black transgender women and men out there who their deaths are being looked upon. Police, oh yeah, gay panic. Okay, we understand. And that's that. Wash their hands of it and move on.
Yep. Gay panic is not a justified reason to kill somebody. I'm sorry. It's just not.
It really isn't. And I think now with Biden as president, I think that law may change in the future. He is doing so much right now to protect the rights and give rights back. He just signed back into law that trans men and women are allowed to be part of the military after Trump decided no, they weren't, and made that a law.
Excellent. Good for him.
So there is a little more information. This last information is basically about him finally being laid to rest after 20 years. So 2 weeks after the 20th anniversary of his death, Matthew's ashes were interred at the Washington National Cathedral. It's a place of safety for him, but it's also a place of quiet for our visitors, Matthew's father, Dennis Shepherd, said. That gives them the chance to just sit and think with their thoughts, whether it's about Matt or themselves or their lives. Over 2,000 people attended the service, with many more watching online. Matthew was just 21 when he was brutally murdered. Reverend Robinson tearfully said, "Gently rest in this place. You are safe now. Matt, welcome home." God, the emotion-filled service turned political at times, with Reverend Robinson demanding the crowd get out and vote for the rights of gay and transgender people. "If you are here just to pay your respects and to remember Matthew, that's not enough. Violence takes a lot of forms, and right now the transgender community is being targeted." In addition to their concerns about the LGBT rights, the Shepherds point to the rise in anti-LGBT homicides. The Anti-Violence Project tracked 52 reported homicides in 2017, an 86% increase in single incident reports from 2016. Barack Obama In 2009, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act into law. The act, which the Shepherds lobbied for, was the first to grant protections in federal legislation to the LGBT community. However, the law did not change state on state levels in Indiana, South Carolina, Georgia, Arkansas, and Matthew's home state, Wyoming.
So I'd like to add on to that. Russell Henderson, this has been 20 years now after the murder of Matthew Shepard, and they had told the media that even 20 years later, they were not out to commit an anti-gay hate crime. They insisted that they wanted to rob Matthew of money and possibly whatever drugs that he may have had on him. And the coroner in the case, who also performed Matthew's autopsy, told reporters that hand-shaped bruises in Shepard's groin area convinced her that this murder was indeed a hate crime. So most of the damage was aimed at his head and his groin, which could be an indicator that they attacked him because of his sexuality.
I didn't look into this information, but would you know if, who was it, Russell Henderson, I think, actually came out and stated that he was gay? Or was it
Aaron? I want to say it's Aaron McKinney, because he was kind of like pimped out there for a while.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Do we know if he ever actually came out and said that he was gay? I'm just curious. Not like it would make any difference regardless.
No. I haven't heard much about that, but I mean, he was known to have slept with men before.
Additional information that came out 13 years later could all just be a lot of homophobia.
Yep.
They spoke to the right homophobic people to get them to state this. Don't quote me on this, but I believe the writer of that book is actually gay.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think I heard something like that, but I don't want to say yes for sure. But that'd be kind of cool.
The team from the Smithsonian actually visited the Shepherds in their home in Wyoming. They came to look through Matthew's possessions, a trove of childhood memories and mementos from his everyday life. The Shepherds actually agreed to donate a collection of Matthew's personal items to the preservation at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. A donation the museum has actually received. His parents sorted out through his belongings in the 20 years since his son's death. The Smithsonian was pretty much told they can take free reign of these boxes, basically. And that's what they did. There is the child-sized Superman cape that Matthew wore every day, some purple ribbons that he received at school, his preschool diploma, some notes from a teacher. If kids are still bothering you about your size, please let me know. I will talk to them. Did you know the best things are often in small packages? There's a little bit more that was actually donated. Let me see if I can. There was one possessions that the Shepherds have never seen before, a wedding ring in a box. His parents actually don't know the story behind it, but she was reminded of a conversation she had with her son in August of 1998 when Hawaii was considering the legalization of same-sex marriage. I don't know this for sure, but it might be that he had hoped that he had found someone, or maybe that's what it means that he did find someone.
That's incredible. That's speculation.
Yes, it is. But besides that, I think...
So was this crime premeditated? I want to say maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. I can't get in the minds of these guys, but I think they had a target, and I think Matthew was their target, and I think they just kind of went with whatever they felt like was going to happen. I don't know if it was clearly thought out, because it was a pretty messy crime. They didn't cover anything up. I mean, it started completely ignorant, this crime.
And they committed another crime shortly afterwards.
So. Exactly. So they weren't worried about not being found out because they put themselves on the radar. They were probably so amped up from the murder.
Or if rumors state, they were amped up from the crystal meth.
Yeah.
Let's so be honest. Would actually make a lot of sense as well.
Yeah, it would. It totally would. I think there might have been a drug motive here, whether Matthew was taking them or not. I don't know, and I'm not going to speak him on that. His autopsy did state, though, that no hard drugs were found in his system.
Which is always great to know. Like, I personally kind of don't believe this whole journalist, what this journalist had to say. But even though the journalist is part of the LGBT community as well, so it's hard to...
but you are too. So I feel like you're a part of it too, so you actually could say more on this than I can. But do you believe it was a hate crime?
From what I've read, I want to say yes. I do believe it was a hate crime. Do I believe it was premeditated myself? That's hard to know. I mean, they all were at the same fireside lounge or restaurant or bar, whatever it was. So the possibility that they spoke before in passing is totally likely. Possible.
Totally.
Is highly likely. So I would think Laramie is kind of like the same town that we're from, Amherstburg, Ontario. So you know everyone. If you don't, if you go out one night, you'll meet everyone, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You don't have to hang out with somebody to know them in passing, like in high school, you know, like I don't hang out with this girl, but I know who she is.
Exactly. Everyone knew pretty much everyone's name. They might not have hung out with them, but
yeah,
I mean, I would say everyone knew like a rumor about someone.
Okay. We hope you enjoyed this episode on Matthew Shepard. Next time on Twin Souls Podcast, we get into the twisted and mysterious deaths of Rebecca Zahau and Max Shackney. We talk about the autopsies, crime scenes, and the court case. Stay tuned for our next episode of Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem.